I'm Chris Stuchko, co-host of the Ninth Grade Experience podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Sarah Delano Moore, and she is the Vice President of Research and Content at Origo Education and Chair of Origo's Mathematics Advisory Board. Our focus today is spaced learning and helping children understand and learn mathematics. This is a cool talk, and you're going to learn so much. Thanks for listening. Oh, by the way, before you go, it'd be so cool if you took time to help out the podcast. You know, here are a couple ways. One is you could tell a friend and share the links. How about another one? You could go to my website and leave a review and subscribe. You could also click on the link on my website homepage where it says, buy me a coffee. By doing this, you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. What do you think? That'd be so cool. You're awesome. Enjoy the show.
In a traditional textbook, I might have done all my multiplication work in chapters 2 and 3, and now it's chapter 7, and I'm working on area. And the teacher has to spend time reteaching multiplication first. If you've used a spaced approach and spread out that teaching of the multiplication facts in small doses, then when area comes, it's just another example. I might need to review a strategy. It's not to say we don't need to review, and kids are each unique beings in how they retain and process and master information. But in general, the first thing schools see and teachers talk about is less reteaching, better retention.
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12, with Dr. Steve Mileto.
Sarah Delano Moore focuses on helping teachers and students understand mathematics as a coherent and connected discipline. An experienced teacher and nationally recognized speaker, her work emphasizes the power of deep understanding and multiple representations for learning. Sarah's interests include building conceptual understanding of mathematics to support procedural fluency and applications, incorporating engaging literature into mathematics and science instruction, and connecting mathematics to engineering design in meaningful ways. She is a fourth-generation educator with experience teaching mathematics and science to K-8 students, as well as experience teaching pre-service and in-service teachers at the university level. Sarah is an author of the Visible Learning for Mathematics series, the Mathematize It series, and the Mastering Math Manipulatives series of books for core in mathematics. She currently serves as Vice President of Research and Content at Origo Education and Chair of Origo's Mathematics Advisory Board. Our focus is spaced learning. Sarah, thanks so much for being on the show, and say hi to everyone.
Well, good morning, everyone. Nice to see you. Glad to be here, Steve.
Well, glad to have you here, Sarah. And to kick things off, you know, give our audience an overview of Origo Education.
We are an elementary mathematics-focused publishing company. Everything we do is focused on helping teachers and students understand the math that they're learning at this level because it is so foundational to what we do. We were established more than 25 years ago as a professional learning company. We have grown to really be a team of educators serving educators in a lot of different roles in the company. And our mission is to make mathematics meaningful, enjoyable, and accessible. And to do that, you have to understand it.
Boy, you got that right. You know, and as I may have been a history teacher, but I took a lot of math. I enjoyed math, and I went through Calc 2, and there's a reason why I didn't go any further than Calc 2, because that's where my understanding started fading a little bit. And good stuff. And I love the fact that this is what you guys do to help with understanding. So love it. All right, so we're going to talk about spaced learning today. Can you talk about what that is?
Sure. It's a well-researched approach to teaching and learning that focuses on long-term understanding. It is about learning over time. And what it's not is cramming for an exam or taking a crash course. Nice. So if we think about our own learning in school, for at least for me, there were times when I needed to cram for an exam. And I memorized my flashcards and I did my thing and I did well on the exam because I can play school. But a month later, when I needed that content, it was gone. Base learning is built off of the research of a researcher named Ebbinghaus, who came up with this idea in 1885 of the forgetting curve. And it is that what we know from a learning session falls off a cliff very quickly in terms of what we retain. And that every time we have a short practice session, that forgetting curve flattens out and we learn, we retain more and more. And so spaced learning is the idea that let's take advantage of that. Teach a little bit, give some time to practice, teach a little more, give some time to practice, rather than teaching all of multiplication in October and November of third grade. Let's start with our twos facts. Then we'll extend that doubling idea to fours and eights. And we'll practice that for a while. Then we'll think about halving and work on fives and tens. And we're still there by March, because the standard says know the facts by the end of the year. It doesn't say know them by Thanksgiving for our, I suspect, primarily American audience, late November. And so spaced learning is the idea that we focus on small doses spread over time so that the brain has time to consolidate, to retrieve, and then to extend those ideas and connect them.
Very cool. I appreciate you explaining that. And, you know, you made me think of something, and if, you know, it's, it made me smile when you're talking about, when information starts going away in a dump and stuff like this. When I was going through some advanced army training, they, had this one sergeant present class. He always wanted this guy to present class because he was awesome. He was not a typical army trainer. And but he got in front of us and he'd look at you and he'd say, all right, now all of you, what I want you to do is I want you to grab your head, turn it sideways, and then hit it on the side nice and hard so you can dump all the other stuff, anybody else that you know, and and we can move on because now you got a clear mind as we focus on today's lesson. And I just envisioned that, what you're talking about with a, you know, brain dump and stuff like this. I mean, because it parts of it is very real, that you learn it, you cram it in there for the test or whatever, and then you find out that you don't really retain much of that when you do that type of stuff.
Exactly. You know, and if you're learning a sport, my husband was a college basketball player. My brother played and coached for years, so I've learned a little bit. You don't say today is dribbling and tomorrow is shooting.
Yes.
You do a little bit at a time. When you learn to drive, they don't give you your license instantly. You have to do some practice and spread it out. We know this intuitively. It makes sense, and it's what we do in our lives. But somehow school hasn't followed that pattern as much. And I think that's to kids and ultimately teachers' detriment. It makes the work harder.
And that makes sense too. That's about doing it a little differently there. I like that. All right. So, can you share some real world applications or success stories where spaced learning, has impacted student learning?
Yeah, I think there are a number of things I hear from schools who are using this approach. The first thing teachers say and teachers see is I have to do less reteaching. Let's go back to my multiplication example. In third grade, typically we learn to multiply earlier in the year, and then later in the year we study area. In a traditional textbook, I might have done all my multiplication work in chapters 2 and 3, and now it's chapter 7 and I'm working on area. And the teacher has to spend time reteaching multiplication first. If you've used a spaced approach and spread out that teaching of the multiplication facts in small doses, then when area comes, it's just another example. I might need to review a strategy. It's not to say we don't need to review, and kids are each unique beings in how they retain and process and master information. But in general, the first thing schools see and teachers talk about is less reteaching, better retention. Then the next thing we start to see, looking at kind of moderately formal assessment data, like benchmark data, is that the summer learning gap reduces. and kids recover faster. So you might have the beginning of the year benchmark scores. They're still down a little bit from where they were in, say, May, end of the year before, but they're not down as much, and the kids bounce back beyond May levels by end of September, beginning of October. So we're not seeing that same summer slide. And then ultimately, the data from work like the Visible Learning Research says that this approach should increase the rate of learning by about 50%, which over time is going to lead to then higher scores on standardized assessments and changes in reductions of achievement gaps and things like that. But the real practical pieces are the reduction in summer slide, less reteaching, and that means I actually have the bandwidth to teach what I'm supposed to teach this year and not get caught skipping those last few things because we ran out of year before we ran out of math.
And boy, do I understand that. You know, it's
I have kids I want to apologize to for that as well. We all do.
Right. It's like, oh, just it got this close. You know, it's like, so can you talk about some strategies for implementing spaced learning in the classroom, especially regarding adjusting curriculum pacing or practicing techniques?
Yeah, I think the place to start is practicing techniques. Because this is a very, ultimately, this is a very curriculum-focused change. It means if you use a traditional elementary textbook for a traditional math textbook at any level, it's probably organized in that masked way. If I have all the content on topic one, then all the content on topic two, then content three. And when you look at the complexity of a school curriculum, starting to rearrange the chapters is hard. That's where we start to need administrator support and a larger concerted effort. If I'm an individual teacher, I'm going to start with two things. I'm going to start by reminding myself and the kids that learning is a process that takes time. Mistakes are indications our brain is working, that it's growing, that it's learning. Same way when you go to the gym, you have to push that muscle and make it a little sore in order to get it stronger. If I am getting every question right, my teacher's not pushing me hard enough. And so I need to have that mindset shift first, because I have to get away from the idea that every answer correct very fast is the definition of good at math. The second thing, and that goes to teachers, that goes to kids, that goes to families. We're going to be doing this a little different, mom and dad, grownups who love these children. And here's what we're focused on. You're going to be seeing, and now we move to the practice piece, you might be seeing 5 or 6 problems come home every day rather than 20 problems come home once a week. Smaller doses, spread it out. And then as I think about practice and homework, I'm always thinking about a couple of problems on what we studied today, a couple of questions about what we did last week, and a couple questions about what we did last month. Or the end of the module, the beginning of the module, and the module before, however you organize it. That notion that I'm practicing not only what I've done today, but I'm also asking my brain to go back and check on. Let's try this thing from last week again. If I've forgotten a little bit, that's okay. This retrieval practice will help me. Teachers can make those two shifts of mindset and of practice fairly easily within any traditional curriculum. And those, I think, are the best places to begin with the idea of spaced learning.
I like that. You know, and just know one of the things that obviously has to change also, you know, when you're talking about adults, it's one thing, but with kids, it's a whole nother one. It's like, can't we, like, you know, it's kind of like the whole thing that the teacher only gives the questions that the answers aren't in the back of the book.
Yes. <know? laughs> I don't want to sign the odd questions because the answers are in the back.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, excuse me. Yes. I noticed that you didn't assign the ones that the answers in the back. And then, you know, usually one of your friends looks at you and says, will you shut up? You know, but you know, it is so important that you get a chance to do more, you know, as opposed to saying, okay, I'm done with that. Now let's move on. And so much in math, you know, it's built upon each level and you start understanding a little bit more. And, you know, it's funny. I mentioned that Calc 2 thing. My professor in Calc 2 said, "Steve, we need to talk. You're making algebra mistakes." And he said, "Let me show you." And he said, "You actually had the right answer right here, but you erased it and put something else down." And you know, that's one of those things when that's what's rough when they make you show your work.
Yes, it's that nasty teacher habit of I used to assign the odd problems and say, "But I'm not grading you on the right answer. I'm grading you on the showing me how you got there." So don't worry about getting the right answer because it's there.
Exactly.
I want to focus on, you know, but there's tremendous stress in math class about getting the right answer.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I started with, we got to back off on that. It's okay if kids get some problems wrong. It's also the reason we don't do 50 practice problems the first night. Because if they don't have it yet, and they just did 50 problems the wrong way, it's deeply etched and engraved in their brains. And now I have to undo that, where two or three is like, okay, let's try it a different way. Not yet.
That's so important because that's, you know, it's what you just said about the idea that practicing 50 problems wrong is stuck in your memory. It's like, do I remember how to do it right?
Exactly. And we don't often think about the decisions we make as teachers. They're so automatic because they're, you know, if we know nothing else about teachers, we teach the way we were taught. And so changing our habits is hard.
Very much so. That's especially when you get into a routine where it's easier to just say, okay, now where am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to do? Yeah, here we go. Okay, now. And if you get into that type of habit, unfortunately, what starts to happen is that you don't recognize, I would think that you don't take the time that needs to happen when you are letting them make mistakes and then figuring out how to get them on the right path so that they remember what's part of that process.
Yeah, our natural intent to be helpful and supportive. And for all of us as teachers, that's, I think some dimension of that is where we start. That natural intent can quickly turn into over-scaffolding and over-helicopter teachering. If that's a word.
I think, like
the notion of helicopter parenting. I want you to feel successful. I want you to be happy. So I am going to help you so much that I land in this world of learned helplessness rather than making it through productive struggle to confidence.
Oh, I like that. That's, you know, because that's definitely out there, as well as I like to think of the Tom Sawyer syndrome, which is, you know, you convince the teacher that, I'm not quite sure I understand. Can you do that part again for me right there? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
And before you know it, the teacher's completed all your work for you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I think that fits with the helicopter teacher right there. Nice.
Yep.
So can you share any challenges educators have encountered in implementing spaced learning and solutions you found that work?
Yeah, there are a couple that are getting started challenges. One is when you start to teach this way, the curriculum can feel choppy. Because rather than, I'll stay in the world of third grade math, rather than spending the first few weeks of school reviewing addition and subtraction, and now we're working with larger and larger values, those kinds of things, and now we transition to multiplication, we might do a little bit of addition and subtraction. Then we're going to do some beginnings of multiplication. Then we might do a little geometry. We might come back to that add subtract work. So it can feel choppy. And recognizing that choppiness has value because it's giving kids' brains a chance to consolidate, let that first round of learning settle before they move to the next part, is a change of mindset for us as teachers. So whatever your strategy is for that, is it an index card or the text on the screensaver on your computer? Is it the reminder you give the class each morning, whatever it might be, to do that? And then you recognize as topics come back, kids are remembering it better. and it starts to naturally reinforce itself, as long as that practice piece we talked about before is in place. I'm not ignoring the learning that's settling. We're doing two or three practice problems about it every day. So we're seeing it, but not as instruction. The second thing that's hard for teachers is the idea that the first time I see content, I'm not going for mastery. Kids don't have to be 100%. We find students who are using a spaced curriculum, you know, our core program is spaced in this way, get behind schedule their first year because they're teaching for mastery at the beginning and not recognizing, wait a minute, that's going to come because this spaced, the spiral review is built in. We're going to see it again. It's that change of mindset, and mindset's hard. These habits are deeply ingrained into us as teachers. The last thing that's hard that really requires collaboration is that curriculum's typically not written this way. A standard textbook is written on a massed approach, all of A, then all of B, then all of C, then all of D. And that rearrangement, however you choose to approach it, that's a big institutional lift. And so that's got to be a decision that we make as a school, as a team. We're going to do this work, and we have the administrator support we need. We have the coaching support we need. We have all the pieces in place to do that. It's hard.
I can imagine. And, you know, just as a student, it, all right, so I'm going to admit something here, which I don't like to admit, which is as a principal, I was trying to, we were orchestrating, I had parents and teachers, and we were working on orchestrating some math review to get ready for different statewide activities that were coming up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we needed some more math instructors to happen in here. So I'm like, I can do this. This is, we're doing some seventh grade stuff here, or eighth grade. I forget what we were doing that we were reviewing, right? That mm-hmm. though they're older kids, that we were reviewing some of these mechanisms like that. And I learned rather quickly that I went over and got my engineer friend and said, tag, you're it. I need to go oversee that history class that you're teaching over there, because this is not my thing. So,
well, we all have expertise. You don't want me teaching history either. I did it for a couple of years in sixth grade because I could read faster than 11-year-olds, and I had a really competent partner. I just had one overflow section, so I don't think I did too much harm. But nice. We have our expertise, and that's important, and that's good to acknowledge.
I think so, very very much so. Otherwise, having put myself in that spot, I was really thankful for the ones that this is what you do. So, you know, one of the things that I got to ask you is, how do you make this sustainable in what a teacher does, what their practices are? How do you help them make spaced learning part of what they do?
Some of it is in the strategies we've already talked about. One way to think about it is to build a curriculum, adopt a curriculum that's organized this way. That provides a basic infrastructure with a lot of learning effort on a school or district's part, but not as much design effort, curriculum planning effort on a school or district's part. I keep coming back to mindset, but that's what it is. The switch to spaced learning is really about curriculum, not instruction. It's about changing how we think about math and what we put in front of kids as math, not just, I'm going to use a different strategy by pulling out a different manipulative or trying a different way of solving the problem. It's a curriculum level change. And if you try to deal with it only as instruction, it's not going to last, because the curriculum is ultimately going to get in the way. And then the old standbys of collaboration and patience, because that's how everything gets done.
Right. I like that, patience. Yes.
Patience is huge. And the deal is, it's like marriage or any other kind of collaborative relationship. As long as we're not both having a bad day about the same thing on the same day, we can get through this.
I like that.
You know, with my teacher team colleagues, my spouse, whoever it might be.
I like that. That's probably like one of the best ingredients right there ever. Because, you know, because we can get frustrated to the point where you might start saying, because you start overriding your mindset change, right? And so that's important to note. What resources or tools would you recommend to support the educators in integrating space learning? I mean,
There's a lot of information about it on Origo's website. And I know that's something you're going to share with show notes. If you want to know more about the research around space learning, the visible learning resources are a good tool. Both there's a general visible learning in mathematics and VL and other topics. And then some grade banded books that talk more about what it looks like in a classroom. Those are not exclusively about spacing, but they'll give you that research base and give you a sense of the data behind it. And then one of the resources that we've found useful over the last few years in really getting practical about this is a book called Powerful Teaching by Agarwal and Bain, which takes a lot of this work and organize it. There's a website as well. Organizes it to really think about how do you put this into practice no matter what you're teaching? What does retrieval practice look like? How do we use these strategies and make them work? So those are three of the places that I would start, kind of depending on what aspect of resource or tools you're looking for.
Cool, thanks. You know, it's so important to have those different resources as you're starting to implement and make your adjustment to making it part of what you do. You know, so let's talk about the person who's just starting out. What advice would you give to an educator just beginning to explore space learning?
I would start with thinking about practice. And the phrase we sometimes use in school that is related really closely to space learning is the idea of spiral review. So that I'm always circling through in my review work those problems from last week and last month, and do I want it to be last year? As we get closer to high stakes assessment time, we might want to be, because we want to practice retrieving and bringing to the front of the brain that learning as well. That's the first instructional step. The first personal step is find a colleague or a coach or a team that you can work with. Hopefully it's somebody in your building or in your district. This is the kind of thing that could be a PLC study group. Let's explore this idea across a grade band and a discipline, say, in intermediate math, the third, fourth, fifth grade. And let's read and learn and think a little bit. It's a little late in the school year to be starting to think about next year, because there's a lot going on with closing the year out. But think, how could we spend some time next year planning, preparing, reading? Don't have to read the whole book, but maybe a chapter or two. And then implement that practice, that spiral review. And the third piece is talk to your community, the families of the kids that you teach. Because it likely means homework doesn't look like it used to look, or like it looked when mom and dad were in school. And to let them know that I'm not doing this on a whim, I'm doing this because it's a well-researched strategy, to help parents see the connections that we talked about informally at the beginning of this conversation. How do you learn a sport? How do you learn to drive a car? It's a very spaced or distributed process. Versus cramming for an exam. We're trying to translate that to school. It didn't happen for you, most likely. It certainly didn't happen for me. And I want it to be different for these kids. Have that conversation so that they know this is where we're going. It has purpose. It has intent. And they have that same caution you do to suspend your immediate no, because it's not like what I learned. Think, yeah. We're getting better. When you know better, you do better.
I like that. Awesome. And you made me think about, with the driving analogy, there's this thing called parallel parking. And, you know, someone who crams for the test.
I will go to great lengths to avoid that.
as will a lot of people. But there's this thing called cramming that when you do that, you can tell people later that, you know, it's like, okay, they're not very good at it. And it takes a lot of practice, especially with the pressure of trying to park someplace where there's people behind you coming down the other side of you. And it's like, go away, go away, go away.
And the person from the motor vehicle department sitting in the passenger seat watching how you do this before they give you a license. I don't know if they still do that, but I had that.
Yeah, I had that too. And in a lot of states, they no longer require that as part of the exam. But if you never had experience, you know what we're talking about. But the practice definitely helps you get better at it. And you have to have a mindset about how you have to drive in order to make it happen and work out right. So
exactly. We're based in Australia. And when I go there, I'm driving on the left.
Nice. Talking about mindset change.
You know, I'm better at it now, but every time I go, that retrieval practice has to come in at, okay, hang on. Keep this way. Left turns are easy. Right turns are hard in terms of crossing traffic. The turn signal and the windshield wiper are reversed.
Wow.
But it comes back faster and faster every time because it's spaced by my travel schedule.
That's cool. Yeah, that would be an interesting, okay, stop just a second. Yes, this is the turn signal. This is the windshield wipers. Yes. All right, we're good. I like that. All right, so Sarah, if you had a chance to talk with an audience of school principals, what would you want them to remember about space learning when they left your talk?
I would want them to remember first that this is a structure that has a long research history and is well supported as a tool both to create life benefits in the sense of a lot of what we do in elementary mathematics is math we'll use for the rest of our lives. It's the math we use informally as we walk down the grocery store aisle, as we plan a party, as we work through our budget. So this is well researched for building life math. Those same benefits will also ultimately lead to improvement in assessment. And they'll lead to the idea that those two things come together has great power. So that's the first thing I want principals to remember, is this is well researched. Secondly, I want them to realize that this is a curriculum decision, not instruction. This isn't something teachers can do by themselves in that sense of one classroom at a time. They can introduce elements of it with the practice. But if we're really going to make the switch, we have to think about that at a curriculum level. And third, that means supporting your teachers with planning time, with resources, with coaching, with helping families. You know, same thing I say to teachers all the time. I don't know the particular kids you teach and the context in which you work. Here are the broad principles. You've got to take them and translate to your world. The same is true for principals. You know your teachers. Do we have to invest a lot of energy because we have a very seasoned staff in changing habits and mindset? Or do we have young teachers who are ready to go, but they're going to need a lot of coaching because they don't have a lot of experience? The mix may change, but I'm always thinking about how do I support my teachers?
Love that. That's so important. So important. Good stuff. All right. So, Sarah, we're getting close to finishing up. Something you referenced earlier is let's share now. I mean, where can we find additional information for our listeners if they're interested in learning more about Origo?
Yeah, that, as I said, our website has a lot of information, stepping stones. Our core curriculum is organized by the spaced approach. We've done the curriculum side of the work in the design of the program. The usual social suspects, as I say, you'll find us in all those places. I'm looking forward to being at a joint conference that NCTM and NCTE are having that's particularly focused on elementary language and math at the end of June in New Orleans. And then what I call Math Week, NCSM followed by NCTM in Chicago in September. And I've got some conference presentations coming up there and would love to see people and talk to people if they're coming as well.
Very cool. That's definitely some serious math going on there. You go from one of those math conferences to the other. So nice. I like that.
Yep.
But I'll put information in the show notes so it's easy for people to find. And last two questions are questions I like to ask my guests and hear what you have to say. So first one goes like this. How do you keep going when so much is going on that you may want to quit?
School wasn't a particularly good place for me. I got sent to the principal's office once for asking why. That didn't go over well in a classroom of flashcards, but I thought it was important. And so some of what happened to me is still happening to kids in school. And it shouldn't have happened to me, and it shouldn't happen to other kids. So what keeps me going in many ways is recognizing that there's still work to be done. And I can try to support teachers and students to help school work better for every child who's there, not just the ones who happen to think like the teacher thinks.
I appreciate you sharing that answer. Awesome. And good stuff. Lots to think about in what you just talked about too, by the way. Thank you. Last question is, do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If so, who was it? And what would you say if given the chance to say thank you?
I knew this question was coming. I narrowed it down to four. Is that okay?
That's fine.
You think about it and you're like, yeah, this person for this and this person for this. The two people who were directly my teachers, Pat Mahone taught me in second grade. Margaret Gunner taught 11th grade American Lit for me. They both really believed in me and saw me as a person. And that went a long way towards strengthening my belief in myself. And that mattered a lot. The third person I would thank is Julian Stanley, who was a professor at Johns Hopkins. Some of the work he was doing that I got involved in let me know that what was going on at school was about the school, not about me. And so Julian was my academic grandpa, I call him, and in many ways he saved me. And then the last one is my mother, who was obviously not a teacher in her role to me, but again, using what she knew about school and advocating for it doesn't have to work this way. We can do things differently. We can ask for forgiveness rather than permission. So I always have to thank her when I'm thinking about teachers.
Oh, I love that answer. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing the four. That was awesome. different impact that they all had, and especially your mother there at the end. I appreciate it. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing Origo Education and Space Learning. What a cool talk and some good stuff to think about, and for those of us in the classroom to consider that mindset change to help make a lasting impact on what we're teaching with our students. Good stuff. Wishing you the best in all you do.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the chance to spread the word about this important idea.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmaletto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.